We're holding on page Chof Tes in Bahamut Siyah, the fifth line, middle of Ois Chof Hei. We started learning yesterday that the Gemara was trying to establish how we know that Reb Meir holds that Kol HaMavir Al Das Shal Bala Bayis Nikra Gazlan, that just doing something different than what a Bala Bayis told you, that what a Bala Bayis told a person that he can do with a sting is called a Gazlan. So the original case was where a person rents a donkey with the intent with, and the Bala Bayis tells him take it on the mountain road and he takes it in the valley instead, or the other way around, then he's chayiv if something happens for it. So the Gemara had said that would follow Reb Meir, that would follow Reb Meir, because according to any other opinion, then why should he be chayiv just for an act? The Bala Bayis should have to bring proof that it's the mountain or the valley, as the case may be, that killed it. So we were trying to prove that, so we brought a case involving money collected for Purim, where Reb Meir is saying that you can't do anything different with it, but we said that's not a proof because the Purim Sudah is something extremely important, and therefore, yes, you can say that when people gave the tzedakah fund or an individual poor person money for the Purim Sudah, they mean, in effect, there's an implicit t'nai over there, the money is theirs only insofar as what's needed for the Sudah, and if they use it for anything else, then it never left the Bala Bayis' reshus in the first place, and therefore, yeah, that would be considered Gezel, but that's not the same thing as this case where we're dealing with over here, where the Bala Bayis did rent him the donkey and just said that then just said that he wants him to only take it on a certain road. So the Gemara says Ela Hor Reb Meir. Rather, we have to follow a different statement of Reb Meir from which we can derive that concept. D'tanya, Reb Shimon Elazar Omer M'Shem Reb Meir. If a person gives a dinner to a poor person for him to buy himself a shirt, then the poor person is not allowed to instead take that money and go and buy a talus with it. Or the other way around, talus, he gives him money for a talus, he's not allowed to use the money for a shirt. Because he's going against what the Bala Bayis had told him, namely that he gave him the money for this kind of clothing and he's going to use it for a different item of clothing. So therefore, that shows that doing like that is called gezel. But again, the Gemara asks, "But Duma Shiny Halsam, maybe." But you know what? That's not a proof that it's only because Mavir Al Das Bala Bayis. Maybe the reason is it's different over there. Also, the Mechshadei. Because then it's going to lead to chashad. It's going to lead to suspicion on the Bala Bayis. Other people know that he told this poor person that he's going to give him money for X item of clothing. And the Amri Inchi, people are going to say, Oma Plani is of Nina Levusha Laplani Anya. Plani, the rich person, said that I'm going to buy a piece of clothing for this particular poor person. Vole Zomanlan, he didn't buy him something. So therefore, they're going to suspect the Bala Bayis of not keeping his word. In the first case, he says, I'm going to buy him a lavush, namely a choluk, a shirt. And in the second case, we're going to say that he promised to buy him a glima, which is a talus, and he didn't buy it. So nothing to do with Mavir Al Das Bala Bayis, but just because there's a shad over there, people are going to think that the Bala Bayis didn't keep his word. How does that show for the case that we were dealing with renting the donkey? And the answer is Imkain. If that was the factor, Lisni Mipnei Achshad, then the Braisa should say just that. Reb Shimon Elazar should be saying that you can't use it for a different item of clothing because that will lead to suspicion on the Bala Bayis. Mine's Mishim Mavir Al Daita Shabala Bayis. Why instead are we using the phrase that because he goes against the word of the Bala Bayis, Shmamina Mishim Dechani, who that shows that that's the primary factor, the fact that he's going against what the Bala Bayis said. Fala Mavir Al Das Bala Bayis, Nikur Gazlan, and that's the juice of the thing. It's called a Gazlan. So therefore, yes, so that proves that Reb Meir actually holds that point, because Reb Shimon Elazar was saying this in the name of Reb Meir. So yes, that applies to the case where the person rented the donkey, that now if he goes on a different route than what the owner had told him to go on, then he can be considered a gazlan, and therefore he's chayav for anything that happens to the animal, and he can't say mesa machnas malacha, and he can't say that, and he can't say anything like that. Okay. Piska, I'm quoting from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, a person rents a donkey, and the animal Hivrika, which we're going to see in the Gemara, what that means. Osha Nasas Angaria, or was taken for government service. Sometimes Angaria is forced labor. Sometimes you would have governments in those days. They would have, for example, they have a need right now for animals to transport things or whatever. So they would go and seize animals from people and force them to transport things for the government. So in that case, the owner of the animal can say, basically, it's your bad mazel. I'm not responsible to give you another donkey. As far as the Angaria, the Gemara makes the Gemara, it's not here in Enyaqa, but the Gemara points out there's differences of what kind of Angaria are we talking about. Is he going to get back the animal afterwards or not? Is he going in the same direction as he was originally? Anyway, so what's this my vihivrika? When we say that the animal is vihivrika, what does that mean? Here in Babel, they translated that it's some kind of eye disease. It actually describes that it's like a dot or something that comes on the black part on the iris or the pupil of the eye. So it prevents the animal from seeing clearly. So it doesn't make the animal completely blind, but it harms its eyesight. Nevertheless, the animal is still usable, basically, and therefore, so the owner can say, yes, I rented you a donkey that didn't have that problem, and now it does, but that doesn't mean that the donkey is still functional, basically, and therefore, I don't have to give you a different one. According to that, Hivrika, so the Shodosh Baruch means a flash of lightning. Here, it's kind of Loshen Sagi Nahar. It damages the animal's eyesight. The animal is not able to see as brightly and clearly as it was before, but nevertheless, it's still usable. Rava Omar, Rava gives a different explanation. Avzekis, that it means that the animal has gotten attacked by wounds that go and burrow into its feet. So again, it's still able to walk, but it's not able to walk as well and as fast as it did before. Nevertheless, again, it is still usable, and therefore the owner can say Harei Shalach Fanecha. According to that, the word Hivrika, again, the Shodosh is Baruch, an alternate form of the word Baruch is Bozok with a Zayim, like you have in your Yechezkel description of the Merkava, V'achayis Yotzev Ashev Kamaya Bozok. So then in that case, Avzekes, so however you pronounce it, is from the same Shodosh, and it means that the animal was attacked by these kinds of wounds. So the Gemara takes a moment to explain something in that connection as far as this term avzekis. There was a person who once told the people in the palace, I've seen avzekis in the milsa of the king. So Rashi explains milsa means the silk garments. So I've seen, and according to that, avzekis, so the same way as we're saying by the animal, avzekis means worms, the same way over here it means some other kind of insects. In this case, it would be moths. So the guy says, I saw moths eating the king's wardrobe. Tosfos gives a different explanation, which makes it closer to what we were just talking about an animal being attacked by worms. Tosfos brings in Girsa that the word is not milsa, but rather mulsa, which would be like the word mules in English. So if according to that, he would be saying that I've seen that there are worms attacking the feet of the king's mules. However, Tosfos doesn't like that explanation because the Aramaic word for there is a, sometimes in Gemara it does use the word muloi. So words like that to mean mules, but here we're telling the story in Aramaic, and the Aramaic word for mules is kudnaisa. So therefore, so it doesn't really fit. So following Rashi and Tosfos's preferred explanation, the guy was saying that I saw moths eating the king's clothing. And again, we're mentioning it because the same word avzekis. So they asked him, what kind of clothing did you see it in? Betlei kesef or betlei dahab? Did you see it in the silver clothing or in the golden clothing? Silver clothing, Rashi explains, would mean the linen clothing. In those times, in general, linen was not usually dyed. It was usually left its natural white color. So therefore, it can be compared to silver, which is whitish in color. Or was it in the golden clothing, which would mean woolen clothing that was dyed red and therefore resembles golden color? Ikadami betlay kesef omar. Some say that he said, some say that he answered that he saw it in the silver clothing. Vakatlua, and therefore, and they killed him for that because moths don't eat linen. So therefore, it means some hacking a chaynik, or it means he's trying to get, maybe he's trying to get the keeper of the wardrobe in trouble or whatever it is. So therefore, so nothing doing. There's no, well, he's obviously lying and being chutz v'dik to the king. Ikadami betlay dahav omar. Another version is he said he saw it in the golden clothing, meaning the woolen ones, the shavkua, and they left him alone because sure, it's natural that it's natural that moths eat woolen clothing, and therefore, good. He's reporting to them something so they can take measures to take care of the matter. There are a couple of other explanations. One explanation is that tlay kesef or tlay dahav in fact mean clothing that has the king's wardrobe, after all, that has silver threads or gold threads woven into it. Well, silver threads can tarnish. So according to that, the avzekas that he's saying means that he saw tarnish in them. So according to that, for Kaplua, he's supposed to be the keeper of the wardrobe. It's his job to make sure that the silver doesn't tarnish, so then he's not taking care of the king's wardrobe properly, and therefore he was punished for that. As opposed to, if it was tlay dahav, if it was something that went wrong with the golden ones, gold doesn't usually tarnish or anything like that, so then there's nothing that he could have done about it. Yet another possibility, the Oruch HaSholim brings is that it may mean that tlay kesef or tlay dahav would be the dishes of the king. So then according to that, and the idea would be that this avzekas creature is yellowish green in color. So it would stand out against silver dishes, but not against gold ones. So if he sees it in silver dishes, what do you mean? You should have removed it. You would have seen it. Whereas if it's in gold dishes, you can excuse him for that because it wouldn't have been so visible. Further on, it talks about that you rent a donkey. Then the Mishnah said that again, the Mishnah talks about various dinim. The Gemara talk about various dinim when you're renting a donkey, what you're allowed and not allowed to put on it. You can't just put whatever you want because first of all, you have to consider the donkey's capacity, but also you have to consider usually when you rent a donkey, the owner would go along with it to help guide the animal, and he himself needs to put his own supplies on the animal as well. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Hasocha Sachamur Luka Valaya Ish, person rents a donkey with the understanding that he's going to have a man ride on it. Loy Tuka Valaya Isha, he's not allowed to instead have a woman ride on it. Because women are not as accustomed to riding. In particular, Ben Yehoyada points out, first of all, because they're not as accustomed to riding, they don't know how to distribute their weight as easily. And also, we find, based on Gemara and Pesachim, that very often they would ride side saddle. Instead of riding astride the animal, they would ride sitting to the side, and that's harder on the animal. So therefore, you can't do that. Isha, but if you rented it with the understanding that a woman will ride on it, then instead you can have a man ride on it, even if it's a heavy set man. The Isha, and when you say you're going to have a woman ride on it, bank dolo, bank tana, whether it's a large woman or a small one. When it comes to men, Tosfos points out, it didn't mention because it's a natural thing. You have lots of large, heavy set men, but women, at least in those times, you didn't have as commonly. So that's the chiddush that even with women, you're allowed to have a heavy woman ride on it.
They're riding, and does that mean somebody is pulling the donkey?
So again, usually you'd have the owner of the donkey would go along with it and lead the animal. But not necessarily, but in general he would, right? But nevertheless, if a woman is riding on it and she's not as used to riding and she rides side saddle, so it's a bigger strain on the animal. But now when he rented it for a woman to ride on it, then it doesn't matter what size she is. Even if she's pregnant, and even if she's nursing a baby and therefore carrying a baby with her. So the Gemara asks, Hashem Nika Amris Muberes Mivoya, if you're telling me that even if she's nursing, then she's allowed to take along, then she's allowed to ride on it and take the baby, even though that's a separate goof, and even though the baby is larger when she's nursing it than when it's in her womb, Muberes Mivoya, needless to say that it would be allowed when she's pregnant and when the baby is inside her. So why bother mentioning Afilu Muberes, Afilu Nika? Just mention that you're allowed to have a nursing mother ride on it, and we would automatically understand that means also a pregnant woman. Amar Papa, Mu Beres Vihimin Nikakomner. So Rabbi Papa says what it actually means is you'd be allowed to, once you rented the donkey with the understanding that a woman will ride on it, then you're allowed to have, even if the woman is both pregnant and nursing. Now, but Bederach Klal, it doesn't usually work that way. Usually a woman is not able to produce milk when she's pregnant, but nevertheless it happens. So now, even if she's pregnant with one baby and nursing the previous one, nevertheless you're still allowed to have her ride, because once you said a woman, then it includes a woman no matter what the situation is with her. Amar Abaya, Abaya says, now since we're mentioning this point, even if she's pregnant, implying that she's heavier than a non-pregnant woman, Shmamina, we see from that, Bimisa Akarisatakla, a fish weighs extra because of its stomach. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, when you buy a fish in the market, the bigger the stomach, the more it weighs. Why is that relevant as far as buying and selling? If you see a fish in the market that has a big stomach, then don't buy it by weight, says Rashi, unless you have the fishmonger, unless you have the storekeeper take out the kishkas first. Because otherwise, basically, you're paying a lot extra for something that weighs that you're not really going to get for the extra weight. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos asks, there really isn't much of a chiddush in that. Of course, a pregnant woman weighs more than a non-pregnant one. And therefore, Tosfos gives a different explanation based on a different girsa, that what we're saying is a pregnant woman, the fact that she's heavier, it's not just the amount that the baby and the fluid and whatever in there weighs, it's also all out of proportion to that, because the fact that she's carrying a baby causes a heaviness in her all out of proportion to it. And therefore we're saying in the same way, the kishkas of a fish cause it to be heavier out of all proportion to the actual weight of the kishkas. So therefore take them out and then you'll get a truer picture of the weight of the fish. Then Yehoyada wonders about that. He says, Mela, when the baby is inside her, okay, she's a living person. The baby is almost like dead weight in her. And therefore, yeah, it causes a heaviness in her no matter where. But in a fish, the fish is dead anyway. What's the difference? How does it make it any heavier? It should be exactly the weight. You take the exact weight of the kishkas, subtract that from the weight of the fish, and there you have the true weight of the actual flesh of the fish. How do you compare it to a pregnant woman? So he says, because when you take out the kishkas, they start drying up. In other words, what you have is, as long as they're in the fish, they absorb water and they retain water, which is similar to the way the baby inside the mother's womb, and therefore it causes it to weigh more than it otherwise would. Take them out, and then you have it. So they start drying up, and then you have there's less extra weight. Caused by that. In other words, like this, you're buying the actual flesh of the fish rather than you don't want to pay extra for the weight of the kishkas themselves, which fine, conceivably you could eat, but also for the water that they retain, which you're not. So therefore, better you should have the fishmonger take them out first, so they'll start drying out, and then you'll get a truer measure of the weight of the fish versus the kishkas. The end of the perek deals with a number of cases involving people transporting barrels of wine. A barrel of wine is pretty heavy, so the Gemara discusses various things that they would do. You'd have porters to transport it from point A to point B, and the Gemara discusses different things of how they have to transport it in a way that's less likely that they're going to break it, and under what circumstances do we consider them to be, if they do break it, under what circumstances are they considered to be negligent, poshim, and then they have to pay for it, versus when not, and so on and so forth. So the Gemara tells a story, Rabba Baba Chana, or the printed Gemara has Rabba Baba Chanan, and on the side it says a different gear says either Rabba Baba Chana, like we have here, or Rabba Baba Huna. In any case, porters that he had transporting from a barrel of wine broke it. So Rashi explains, based on the earlier piece of Gemara, that if it's a slope, if the street that they're going on is slope, then it's not such a pshia if they trip and break it, because yeah, it's a steep slope, and therefore they might well lose their footing. But here it was a smooth road, it was a flat road, and they were careless, and they tripped and they broke it. So it was pshia on their part. On the side over here, and in Chedusha Ga'onim, it brings from the, It brings from Shit to Mukubetz. That's a number of different possibilities. That maybe it was an oinus. Maybe another possibility is that maybe it was an oinus. Maybe it's one of those cases where the Gemara discusses before this that if they were to take a shavua, that it wasn't carelessness of theirs, then they would have been believed. In any case, whatever the story was, Shokol Liglimaihu, Rabba Baba Chana took their coats. He was going to hold on to their coats to force them to. So if it was according to Rashi, it was Pshia, then to force them to pay, because they're going to need their coats back. And according to the other possibilities, maybe it wasn't Pshia, but maybe this way he'll force them to come to Beis Din to take their shavua. Also, Amru L'Rav, they came and told Rav what happened. We'd like our coats back. So Rav says to Rav Abba Machana, Havlahu Glimaihu, give them back their coats. Omalei, so Rav asks, Dina Hachi, is that the actual din? The fact is, I'm entitled, whether because they were Peshea, whether because they have to swear, whatever the case is, I'm entitled to confiscate their coats in order to force the issue. Omalei, so Rav answers him, yes, as the Pasuk says, L'man Telech B'derech Tovim, in order that you should go in the way of the good. Meaning you should go, the Fnim Meshuras HaDin, yes, maybe La Halacha, you're entitled to keep their coats, but nevertheless, you should go, you should do the Fnim Meshuras HaDin and not take them from them. Omrulei, so now these people said, Aniye Yanan, we got back our coats, thank you, but we're poor, V'tarchinen Kula Yoyme, we've worked now the entire day, V'kafin, now we have nothing to show for it, V'kafin, and we're hungry, V'les Flamidi, and we don't have anything, because now, fine, we got back our coats, but the fact is, we worked the entire day trying to transport this barrel for him, and now we have nothing to show for it to bring home to feed our families. Amalei, so Rav Abba Chana answers them, Zil Havlahu Agrayu, go pay them. Go pay them the wages that you would have paid them if they brought the barrel intact. Amalei, so again, Rav says, Dina Hachi, is that the din? The fact is, they caused me a loss. Amalei Ein, and again, Rav says to him, yes, as the same passage continues, V'orchus Tzadikim Tishmer, and guard the ways of Tzadikim. So meaning, in other words, that is why is it important for us to know that it's the second half of the same pasuk? So Maor Shor explains, because if it was different psukim, then you could say, you know what, fine, Laman Telech B'derech, fine, Derech Toivim, and Urchas Tzadikim both mean the same thing, fine, don't make them lose their own money, don't take away their coats from them. But that Rabbah should have to pay out of his own pocket for their work, when in fact the fact is they did cause him a loss and they didn't bring the barrel to where they were supposed to. So, but now that it's in the same pasuk, then it must mean that it's going beyond what we said before. So not only can you not take their coats from them, but also you need to give them their wages. Marshall also explains like this. In Bava Kamma, the Gemara discusses the question: when a person trips. If a person trips in the street and causes an accident, he breaks something that he's carrying for something else, for somebody else, or other people, then other people can't stop in time and they trip over him, etc. So the mayor holds in the Gemara and Bava Kamma, Nipkal Pesheya, who tripping is itself considered Pshia. Rabbi Barav Chana held like that. So therefore he figured, Rashi had said that it was Pshia. So specifically, he says, Marasha, they had tripped, and Rabbi Baba Chana took the view, like Reb Meir, that's carelessness on their behalf. Now Rashi had said that it wasn't the Mokum Nidra, and it was not on sloped ground. However, Marshal learns differently. It was on sloped ground. So Rav tells them, Man Telech B'derech Tovim, you made them go in a place which is sloped, and in that case, Nitka Lavfa Shehu. So in that case, you can't call it Pshia on their part because it was ground where they would have a hard time keeping their foot. Now, since once we've established, says Rav, that they're not Poshim, then V'orchus Tzadikim Tishmer, on the contrary, then don't consider them like Poshim, rather consider them like Tzadikim, as we find, Tzadikim Yelchubam, Poshim Yukoshlubam, if their tripping had been considered Pshia, then yeah, you'd have the right to consider them like Poshim, and maybe to take their coats. But because once we've established now that their tripping is not Pshia, then just the opposite, treat them like Tzadikim, Yelchubam, they went in the way that they were supposed to, they tried their best, and therefore you should pay them for that. A couple of couple of Mephoshim deal with over here, the difference between derech tovim and orchus tzaddikim. So one explanation based on the Al Shech HaKadosh is that tovim is more than tzaddikim. So Rav is telling them like this: if you do one good thing for them by returning them their coats, then fine, that's a very good thing. But you haven't yet done the ultimate that you could do. Do the same thing twice. Do the same mitzvah twice to be mevater to them, and not only don't charge them, but also pay them. Then you will be on the level. Then you'll have done not only orchus tzaddikim, but also derech tovim. You'll have raised yourself to the level where what you did to begin with really was toiv. So that's the vort. In other words, the Al Shech understands that tzaddikim is less than tovim. So he says the vort is, in other words, if you do it the one time, then yeah, it can be called orchus tzaddikim tishmer. But when you do it again, by not only being mevater to them and not taking their coats, but even paying them, even though they didn't do the job, then that will be considered derech tovim. Anaf Yosef brings over here, actually, or Eitz Yosef, rather, brings over here from the Vilna Gaon the other way around, the Vilna Gaon's Pirush on the Pasuk in Mishlei, that it's the other way around. Tzaddikim is more than Tovim, and therefore the Vort is that, don't just be a Tov, also be a Tzaddik, and go even beyond that. Fine. So in other words, to be Moichel on the Hezek, and not give them back their coats, that would be derech tovim. That's what the ordinary toiv would do. But you should go even beyond that and be a tzaddik and go even more lefnim mishuras hadin and pay them. The Malbim on the Pasuk also gives a similar explanation. He points out derech refers to the main road. Orchus refers to side roads. So in other words, the vort is derech tovim is the standard road that every good person should go in. Orchus tzaddikim means the individual side path that tzaddikim are expected to follow. And you should do, not only that, says Rab, you should do the side path as well on your level. So the Shalom HaKadosh explains, basically, that Rav is telling him, I know you, Rav Baba Chana, in the past you've always been willing to be mevater and go the extra mile on behalf of another yid, therefore that becomes your floor now of what you should do, and you should stick to that now also and be mevater to these guys and even pay them. Mela, in other words, if you hadn't done this in the past, then I can't require you to do that, but since this is how you've always acted, then now also you should hold yourself to that standard and do that.
Can you say that these workers saw Rav tell him go back to coats, then they brought up we're hungry, etc., and then just because he saw?
Well, yeah, I mean, if he hadn't given them back their coats, they wouldn't have had the break kite to ask for their wages, of course, right? So once they saw that they were able to do the first thing, then they have. Ion Yaakov points out, by the way, as a matter of halacha anyway, given that there were two porters over here, which one of them is it that's really responsible? Each one can say the other one is the one who was the Peshea. Therefore, Rav is also telling him, therefore, from the point of view of the Sofet, they're both potter, because you can't prove that either one of them is responsible. As far as Lefnim Meshuras HaDin, give them their wages. Okay. Apoyel and Perek Shvi. So this Perek begins by also continuing with Dinim about when a person hires workers. One of the things it talks about is that if he asks them to come early to the job and stay late. So that leads the Gemara into a short discussion of when workers are expected to be on the job from when until when. And in turn, that leads the Gemara into the following Jerusha. Donash Rav Zera, Va'amri Lo Tonar Rav Yosef, Mai Dichtiv, what does it mean, the Pasuk in Kapitel Kuf Dalad, Baruch Hinafshi, the Pasuk says, Toshes Choshech, you Hashem make it dark, Vihi Loila, and it becomes nighttime, Bois Sumas Ko Chai Seyar, then all of the animals of the forests swarm around. So what does that mean? Toshes Choshech Vihi Loila, Zeha Oilam Azesh, Adomi Lo Laila. When it says you make it dark, and it becomes night, that refers to this world, which is compared to night. You don't see clearly, by night, you have in fact two things, Anaf Yosef points out. You have, on the one hand, here you have on the one hand, at night you don't see anything, you don't see things at all. You often don't see things that are in front of you. Second of all, you misunderstand, you misidentify the things that you do see. So therefore, that's like the two kinds of things that we have in this world, where first of all, we don't see what the truth is, and second of all, that we look at the untrue and false and no good things and think to ourselves that they're good. So therefore, that's compared to the darkness of Olam Hazeh. When the Pasuk says, Bo Sirmus Kochai Seyar, then all the wild animals of the forest swarm around, Eber Rishoyim Shaboy, that refers to the Rishoyim in the world, Shadom and Lachaya Shabiyar, which resemble wild animals in the forest, which are dangerous. Ben Yoyada points out, so why dafka the animals of the forest? He says, because animals in the desert, there's no tree cover, there's no ground cover. So you'll see them far away and know to get away from them. But in the forest, they can all of a sudden jump out at you from behind a tree and you wouldn't know. The same way the Rishoyim, sometimes jump out at a person unexpectedly. Next, the pasuk continues. Tizra Hashemesh Yeosefun, when the sun rises, then they're gathered in, and in Poshet Pshat, it means that now the wild animal, in the simple meaning, it's talking about how the Hashem gives the wild animals their time to roam around at night, and then when it comes in the morning, then they go into their dens and they sleep there during the day. So Tizra Hashemesh Yeosefun, in the Drosha, when the Poshet says the sun shines, and then they're gathered in, Ve'almoy Noisem Yurbotsun, and they lie down and they sleep in their dens. So Tizra Hashemesh LaTzadikim. That means here we're talking about Olam Hazeh is a dark place. But then the sun shines for the Tzadikim, and then we see the truth of what's going on in the world. The Osfur Rishoyim LaGehenim. And when it says they will be gathered in, means the Rishoyim are then gathered into Gehenim, so that they're out of the picture. The Omoy Noisim Yurbotsun. And when the pasuk continues, they crouch down and they lie down in their dwellings. That means Emachokot Tzadik Vatzadik in the Modul of Fikloide. There's not a single Tzadik who in Olam Haba does not have an appropriate place, an appropriate dwelling for according to his covered. So the Omoy Noisim, in other words, is in the plural. Not Moy Nosim, which would mean one. one dwelling place for all of them, but among no sum in the plural, meaning that each one has a different place in Gan Eden appropriate to what he accomplished in this world.
They
can
see each other's places?
They can see each other, yeah, but the point is that each one has a place that's appropriate to his covered. Yeah, the Gemara mentioned in Baba Basra even that each one is jealous of the other one. Each one sees what the other one accomplished, and yeah. Ben Yehoyada points out the word Mo'in Noisam can also be broken down into Mo'in Tam. It means the dwelling place for each one, for the perfect one as the tzaddik was. And the pasuk continues, Yetzer Adam Lefaloi, a man goes out to his work. That means, now before, the Gemara had brought this pasuk to show that workers are expected to remain on the job until nightfall. But now, Yetzer Adam Lefaloi means Yetzer Tzaddikim L'kabel Scharan. The tzaddikim now come out in Olam Haba to receive their schar, v'lavodosei adei orev, and to their work until evening. That means, what do we mean until evening? V'misha hishlam avodosei adei orev. This applies to those who continued in their avoda and completed their avoda until the evening, meaning until their entire life until they die, as opposed to Iyun Yaakov and Yad Yosef, both mentioned. There can be a case, the Gemara mentions in Kedushin, where a tzaddik at some point regrets the mitzvahs that he did, and why did I bother doing them, and then he loses the schus for them. But no, we mean he doesn't do that. He remains the same tzaddik and continues to do his avoda adei orev until the evening, until his gashmiyistika life is over. Ben Yehoyada points out that, first of all, Marasha points out that adei orev can also be, first of all, meloshin the evening, as in when they pass away. It can also be meloshin orev v'tainug, as in their sweetness, as in now they pass away and they have sweetness in them, their tainug in Gan Eden. Ben Yehoyada points out, as also Moshe Arev, who says in the tzaddik realizes not just his own avoda, he's Arev on behalf of his fellow Jews as well.
If you say Tizra Hashem Kiatzifun is also going on the Rishon, then when it's then the next world and they'll see light, then they'll realize what they did wrong.
Yeah, I mean the fact is the Gemara mentions elsewhere, for example, that when the sun shines, lost in love, and the Rishonim will be burnt up by it. Right, but here we're saying Tizra Hashemesh, that it will shine, suggesting in a positive sense. Then that means, you know, the tzaddikim will have the positive, will have something positive from it. Maharsha points out that the Gemara has left out one pasuk in the middle. After the pasuk Toshes Choshech Vehi Loila Vesimus Kochai Seyar, you have another pasuk in the capital. Hakfirim Shoyegim Latoref, the young lions roar for their food. Olavakish Mekel Ochlam, and they ask Hashem for their food. So why isn't the Gemara bringing that? So Yichus Amar Shoachslim, the same kind of thing. The lions is a metaphor for the Rishoyim. So they're looking at Fidim Shoyagim Latorah, they're roaring and they're looking for prey, they're looking to prey on the poor people. And then Ulavakish Mikhail Ochlam, on the other hand, the Tzaddikim are not looking for prey, they're not looking for more than what they need, they're just asking for their bare food, for their bare necessities, like Yaakov and Vinasan Lachem Lachel or Vegad Lobush. So therefore, so it all fits together. Okay. So we'll start learning next time, Be'ez Hashem, about a story in this connection about the Rishoyim being compared to wild animals that roam around at night, and what that means in terms of how we should deal with them.
Animals, aren't they instinctive as opposed to they can choose good and bad?
Yeah, we're not saying that they have a choice, but we're saying that the fact is, when we use them as a metaphor for Rishoyim, the Rishoyim are looking literally taref, they're looking to prey on the poor, and we use as a metaphor for that the animals like the predators, like the lions, that are hardwired to do that. Yeah. All right. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugula, Yudalim Kislev. Being that the anniversary of the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin, so therefore today's piece talks about a chuppah. Now, people some that this was part of a sicha talking about the importance of chassidus for nowadays. So some people argue, sure, chassidus is a good thing. After all, it's compared to jewels. Evan Tovish and Ketzer Amalach and all that. But so what? Who needs jewels? I'm. It's good enough for me. I have my levushim, my machshava dibro ma'aser are complete. I have jewelry, but I don't need to have my Goliath. I don't need pearls. So why do I need chassidus? Such a person would argue. So the answer is, first of all, the Rebbe points out, there is a din in Shulchan Aruch, that there is a chiyuv to learn Pnimiyas HaTorah, just like every other part of Torah. So for that reason alone, to be mekayim that mitzvah, then you have to do that. Not only that, as we just said in the Gemara, that this world is compared to darkness, and especially in Ikvas de Meshicha, we have a greater darkness, so we definitely have to learn Chassidus in order that the Levushim themselves should be complete. But not only that, you could say, you know what, this kind of idea that I don't need pearls, that would have been appropriate in earlier generations. But now, we're getting ready to go to the Chuppah with Melech Malchah and Lachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what do you mean you're not looking for pearls? You should want to have everything you could in order to decorate that Chuppah. Representing, in other words, that the Chassidus is a very necessary thing and we need to have it, and it's not just something extra. Yeah. Okay, continuing on halachas of Hashkamas HaBoker. So we were talking about that a person needs to get up right away in the morning, and then in general throughout the person's day he needs to constantly realize that the Eibishter is watching him, and that'll cause him to act and then to act and think in a different way. A person should never be embarrassed when people confront him about avodah and mock him. However, he should not answer in an azustika way. Don't answer in a chutzpitika way to such guys, because you don't want to learn, you don't want to develop a habit of being azponim in an inappropriate place. So in other words, here, in a case like this, azus is appropriate, but you need to not get in the habit of developing that midah in general, and therefore don't answer these guys in an azustika way. Either ignore them or answer them in a gentle way, in other words. Here we were talking about that a person ideally should be getting up even before dawn, because our Ira Shochar, as David HaMelech says, I wake up the dawn. The person can't do that if he can't get up before dawn, at least he needs to be sure to get up in time for the minyan, when the tzibur is davening.
What time's dawn now?
Nowadays, dawn is, I don't know, five or six in the morning, I guess, I don't know. You can look it up on the calendars. Okay. Person needs to when he gets up, he should say Moedan in Fanecha. You don't need Tilos Yedayim, because even if your hands are dirty, because there's no Kedusha in this Nusach, because there's no name of Hashem, so at least none of the names of Hashem that can't be erased. You have Melech Chai V'Kayim, which are nicknames, so to speak, for Hashem, but those are not words that cannot be erased, therefore you can say them with unwashed hands, as we learned when we learned Madura Basra, and as our Rebbe explains in Kundras in Yonash Al-Torah Sachsinus, the deeper idea of it is that Moida'ani represents the Nekuda Sayyadus, the Pint of the Yid, which no Tumah can ever touch, and therefore a person is able to say it without Netilas Yedayim. As far as actual Divrei Torah, though, a person is not allowed to say before he washes his hands, because the words themselves have kedusha. You are allowed to think words of Torah, even when your hands are not clean. How about listening to a shiur on the radio? I don't know. I mean, they're pure. You're only thinking of it. You're not saying it. So, l'chora, it might be allowed. We talked about when we talked about previously in Madhura Bhaskara about that you shouldn't just be lying in bed, that you shouldn't just you shouldn't just be lying in bed saying Madani. You either lie in bed but put your hands together, or you sit up without your feet touching the floor and put your hands together and say Madani that way with your head bowed, or either you have your hands together, or some people understand it to mean that you put your hands one on one on your left hand on your chest and your right hand on top of that, and you say Madani and then you get up. Now, another detail in that connection, the Gemara says that if a person wakes up and right away gets onto his feet, it's part of l'misa yosim and achayim. Such a thing is closer to death than to life. So therefore, a person shouldn't do that. He should wait a moment before he gets up. So in other words, what you do is, for example, so like you do that, you sit up and say Modami, and then you get up, then you're fine, then you don't have this issue.
It says, Rabbi, when I check up.
Yeah.
Great is our faith in you, Hashem.
So it's both. It means great is our faith in you, but it also means great is Hashem's faith in us. Okay. That's why Hashem gives us a new day, because it means Hashem trusts us, Hashem has faith in us, that we're going to accomplish our avodah today.